and now evangelist David Shannon.
If you'll be opening your Bibles to 1 Corinthians, the 13th chapter. 1 Corinthians 13. Love is the answer. Love is what makes the world go around. Love is the bridge that crosses troubled waters. And so many things have been said in a positive nature about love. And I urge you to realize tonight that maybe not all those things are true, because just perhaps love may be the problem instead of the answer. Now, I know that love and the concept of love itself is not the problem, but I do believe with all of my heart that many problems that we have within the church and many problems that we even have within Christianity is because we have a failed understanding of what love is by definition alone. You see, if I could pick out one hardship that we have in having an English Bible, and I know we speak English, and so I'm proud to have an English Bible, but please realize, one hardship of having an English Bible is the fact that six different concepts of love have been translated into the Scriptures under one word alone, and that word is love. It's hard to understand exactly what is meant when someone says, "I love you." It's hard to understand exactly what someone means anytime they use the word love within a sentence. Let me give you a few examples quickly. There's a man and a woman. They've been married for 50 years. They've went through some very difficult times. They've had wonderful times together. At their 50th anniversary, someone comes up to them and says, "Granddaddy, Grandmother, what kept you all together over 50 years? And they look at each other and they say, "We always loved each other. And that kept us together." Well, then you go out to work the next day and you see a guy running a jackhammer all day long. And he's soaking wet of sweat. He's given out. His muscles are aching. And it comes time for the afternoon break. And he shuts down his jackhammer and he walks over to the truck and he picks up a cold drink and a candy bar. And he sits down and he says, "I love breaks." You see a young man. He's a class clown. He goes into class, the beginning of school, as our children do in the next week or two, and a couple of the other kids punch each other and say, "Look, oh, Stevie's in our class this year. I just love it when he's in our class." Now, let me get this right. It's love that keeps a couple together 50 years. It's love that makes you enjoy the class clown. And it's love that you have for a candy bar and a drink. I don't think I understand what this word love is. If love is that broad, if love really is fitting in all of those situations, well, according to our English language, all of those are correct. But yet, we struggle then when we look and we read that our God expects us to love Him. We struggle when we believe and read that the Bible says husbands are to love their wives. And then we struggle even further whenever we read that the Bible tells us to love our enemies. Tonight, I want to spend the first few minutes of this in an unusual way according to my usual delivery. Usually we read a text and go right into it. I somewhat apologize, but I also inform you that the definitions I'm going to give you are straight from Bible text or either from Bible concepts. And if we can better understand these definitions, I really believe that it'll help us in life. And then in a few minutes we'll look at 1 Corinthians 13 and see how these are applied. Think carefully on these four as we define them, because I really think it can make a difference in our life if we don't understand this already. One love that is mentioned in the Bible in the original Greek would be agape. There are many ways in which agape can be defined, but for simple usage tonight, let's define agape simply as doing what is right and what is best, whether we feel like it or not. You see, agape is used over 250 times in the New Testament, and it is the only love that is commanded. It is a love that is not based upon emotion. In other words, whenever I decide to agape you or to agape God or to agape my wife or my children or my neighbors, I do not make that decision based upon emotion. I make that decision based upon a reasoning in my mind that says this is right or this is best. Agape. Very, very important concept when we look at love in the Bible. A second kind of love mentioned in the Bible in the Greek would be philia. Philia is that warm emotional feeling. It's what we have towards our friends. It's what we have whenever someone says, "I'm glad the class clown is in my class this year because I enjoy it. I like it," in other words. It's what we have whenever we haven't seen that friend in a good while and you know that they're coming to see you and you have that warm, tingling feeling inside and you say, you know, we grew up together and I can't wait. He's going to be here tomorrow and we'll get to reminisce and we'll get to spend the day together. It's also that feeling that husbands and wives have sometimes. And then sometimes when the husband's gotten on the wife's last nerve, it's also that emotion that fleets right out the door. You see, it's a wonderful thing to have. But it's never commanded because it's simply an emotion. It comes and it goes. What's such a sad thing is that many, sometimes even Christians, sometimes all of us, base our decision upon our commitment to God and our commitment to each other based upon an emotion, philia, not upon a commitment, agape. There is a third type of love that we'll define. It is called storge. You've heard the expression, blood is thicker than water. Storge is the blood being thicker than water. In other words, storge is not an emotion, but it is a love that God has born within each of us. A few examples perhaps would best define it. My mother and father, as they were foster parents when I was of young age, we had a few children that carried the scars from a very abusive father. But it was not uncommon at all whenever these children were upset for them to cry out for that same father that abused them. It's not uncommon at all for young children when they are beaten one night by a father or by a mother to the very next night to cry out in a bad dream for that same mother or that same father. And we might shake our hands and say, I don't understand why. It's storge. It's born within us. It's a very beautiful love that pulls families closer together than any other group of people on this earth. But yet, it's also something that, if we're not careful, it too can be abused. There is a fourth love, and it's eros. It's what much of our society in this day is reducing all types of love to. But yet, God has not reduced all types of love to eros. Eros is a sexual love that He intended for it to only be between a husband and wife within the marriage boundaries. Now, with these things in mind, we see that there can be many problems. Many problems whenever individuals base their decisions or their commitment upon any other level of love other than agape. Agape is what God did when God agape'd the world and gave His only begotten Son. Agape is what is expected of us in the first and greatest commandment. To agape the Lord thy God with all thy heart, soul, mind, and strength. The second's likened to it. Agape thy neighbor as thyself. So this means when it comes to my commitment to my Lord, that I do what is right and what is best in the sight of my Lord, whether I feel like it or not. There's going to be times when the peer pressure pulls me in another direction, but I have to decide, am I going to do what I want to do, or am I going to agape God? I have to agape my neighbor. There are going to be times when I might want to mistreat my neighbor. I might want to seek revenge, but I have to decide, am I going to do that or am I going to agape my neighbor? Now, let's give the best definition by story that agape has ever known. It was the last week of Jesus' life. Jesus would make that grand entry into Jerusalem. They would cry out, Hail, King of the Jews! And they would put down palm leaves, almost like a ticker tape parade down New York City in today's time. And don't you know that the 12 were proud to be with Him? They were one of His. After all, it appeared that Jesus would be the next governor, the next religious leader. He would definitely be the one in command because He was having more followers, more authority, more knowledge exemplified than anybody else on the face of this earth at that time. You see, things look great. They look perhaps better than ever for Jesus Christ and His followers. But something changed in 1 week's time. The religious leaders began a scandal. And then they got followers behind. And those same people that yelled out, Hail, Jesus, King of the Jews, by the end of the week would be yelling out, Jesus, crucify Him, crucify Him. He would go to the Garden of Gethsemane that night. And He would pray. He would take 3 closest friends further with Him, but then He would even leave them behind. And 3 times He would pray, Lord, let this cup pass from me. Not my will, but Thy will be done. Jesus, what are You saying? He's saying, I don't want to go through this. I don't desire to die this type of death. But if it's right, Father, I'll do it whether it feels good or not. After three times of that prayer, he went back to meet Judas. He accepted the betrayal kiss. He went through the mock trials, not sinning at all. Not because he wanted to, but because it was agape. It was what was best and right in the will of God. He went and he accepted the 39 lashes across his bare back. Not because it felt good or because he wanted to, but because it was right. He went and he wore the robe. He carried the rod. He wore the thorns. He accepted the spit in his face. He accepted the mocking. Not because any of it felt good, but because it was right for him to do that in the sight of God. He drug the cross as far as he could drag it. He then laid on it as they nailed him to it. And then they lifted it up as he, for hours, struggled for breath. And again, accepted the mocking. None of it, not any of it, was because it felt good or he wanted to. All of it was agape love, doing right, whether it feels good or not. And brethren, that's what our commitment must be to God. Every decision in our life, based upon how I treat my neighbors, based upon my relationship to God, based upon my family, based upon the congregation at East Gadsden, everything must be what is right and what is best, not what I want to do. With that in mind, let's look to 1 Corinthians, the 13th chapter, which is perhaps one of the greatest written definitions of agape love. He begins in the first three verses of 1 Corinthians 13 by telling us how important it is and the danger if it is absent. He says, "Though I speak with the tongues of men and of angels and have not charity," or we usually call it love, in the Greek it would be agape, "I'm become as sounding brass or tinkling cymbal. And though I have the gift of prophecy and understand all mysteries and all knowledge, and though I have all faith so that I could remove mountains and have not agape, I am nothing. And though I bestow all my goods to feed the poor, and though I give my body to be burned and have not agape, it profits me nothing." Do you see how Paul goes to the extreme to make his point? And even his extreme here is not an exaggeration. The extreme is the truth. He begins by saying to them what they thought in Corinth was the greatest gift that God had ever given a person. And they thought that speaking in tongues was one of the greatest gifts. And he takes that and he says, if you can speak in tongues, but you do not do it with the motive of agape, in other words, doing what is right or what is best, he says it's worth absolutely nothing. Then in verse 2 he goes and he says, you may have all knowledge. You may have prophecy, which was literally a message from God. All knowledge, a message from God. And he says, it too is worth nothing. He didn't say a little bit. He said nothing if, in fact, we carry out this knowledge without agape. Then in verse 3, he gives two examples. He says, you might go out and do a good deed like feeding the poor. Or he says, you may even offer your physical body to be burned. You see, it was the thought in that day and time under persecution, as if it would probably be the thought today. But if someone offered themselves to die for the cause of Christ, that they were an automatic shoe-in for salvation. Why, look, a Roman soldier over there just crucified a Christian. That good soul, they'll definitely be in heaven. And here, Paul says, no, that's not a definite. He says, it doesn't matter what you do and how right it looks. He says, if you haven't done it out of agape love, it's worth nothing. You may have knowledge enough to move mountains. You may have gifts enough to speak in tongues. You may be willing to make a sacrifice enough to give your life. But if it's without agape, it's nothing. Well, Paul, what is it then? What is it that we need to know about this tremendous, powerful love of agape? And he tells us in the next few verses about this love. Notice in verse 4, the first two things he says is charity, or agape, suffereth long and is kind. Paul oftentimes throughout the Scriptures links these two thoughts together. The long-suffering, or sometimes called the patience, along with the kindness. You see, one is passive and one is active. And someone says, well, it doesn't seem very passive to me when someone slaps you on the cheek to turn the other cheek and allow them to slap again. But yet, even though it is difficult, not saying that it's easy, it still is a very passive action. And we might look upon that and say, if I can do that, I've done enough. And Paul would say, no, not under agape love. Under agape love, whenever you turn the other cheek, you've only begun. Now there's something else you must do. Now you must channel your energies into going out and finding something good to do for that person in return. So he takes it from accepting the wrongdoing, and then instead of seeking revenge, going out and finding something that is kind to give back in return. A challenging thought, but definitely it's agape. Now keep in mind, if agape was based upon emotion or based upon what I wanted to do, when someone injured me in some way, I would immediately, based upon my emotions, seek some kind of revenge. Agape is a decision. A decision that says I want to do what is right and I want to do what is best, whether I like it or not, whether it feels good or not. And so we go and we seek what is kind to offer back in return. Notice the next thing as we complete verse 4. He says, charity or agape envieth not, it vaunteth not itself, and is not puffed up. At least five times throughout 1 Corinthians, Paul has said that the people in Corinth have suffered with pride, being puffed up. And usually after each time, he goes ahead and mentions what sin it has led them into. If you'll think about it, every time you and I act on selfish motives, we usually sin. Without doubt. Almost every time we act on selfish motives, we sin. And so here, Paul has given us a beautiful definition of agape. And he says one thing that agape never does is it never puffs itself up so that it acts and reacts upon itself. But it looks to see what is right and what is best and reacts upon that. Notice the next phrase. Verse 5, doth not behave itself unseemly, seeketh not her own, is not easily provoked. Agape love behaves in a proper way, in a proper manner. The truth is, you and I as Christians, we should be the most courteous, respectful group of people that's ever met together. And when we break up and we go into our neighborhoods and we go into our workplaces tomorrow and we go into the shopping areas, we ought to be recognized by our behavior, by being polite and kind. You know, there's people that whenever they walk up to the cashier and the cashier says, hello, how you doing today? They just grumble, just, all right. Someone says, why do you do that? Why aren't you kind? Why don't you say, I'm doing well or I'm not doing so well, thank you. And they say, I didn't want to. Well, you see, if you're out in the world and you're serving Satan, that's fine. That's acceptable in behavior that's unacceptable. But agape doesn't do that. Agape behaves itself in an appropriate manner. Agape behaves itself in such a manner that when we're out shopping, people enjoy being around us because we're not concentrating on self, but we're concentrating upon them and what is appropriate and what is best. The same in our neighbors, the same in our homes, and the same within a congregation. It's not always easy. It always requires a decision to be made, and the decision is not based upon how I feel or what I want. It's based upon what is right in the sight of God. Notice as we read on here, he says as we finish verse 5 and we go into verse 6, that agape thinketh no evil, rejoiceth not in iniquity, but rejoiceth in truth. There's our definition that we're using for tonight. Agape reacts and responds based upon what is right. Agape looks at what is iniquity and what is sin, and agape says, I can't be a part of that. Agape studies the truth and sees what is right and says, that's what I must do. But agape never, never reacts based upon emotion and desire only, but based upon what is best and what is right according to the truth. Now notice the word all, A-L-L, in verse 7. Agape beareth all things, believeth all things, hopeth all things, and endureth all things. Paul again goes to an extreme to show how beautiful agape is. Agape can cover every relationship in life. And let me say it one more time. Agape covers every relationship in life. You look at any relationship that has failed in your life, and without doubt, it's failed because one, if not both parties in that relationship have failed in agape. You look at any congregation that has had problems, and the lack of someone keeping agape was the part that failed. You look at anyone that's walked away from their God, and they walked away because they lacked agape. You look at any parent and child that's had problems with each other, and it's failed every time because of agape. You see, when Paul says that it can bear all things, Paul is saying that agape is the answer to all problems. And agape can help you bear the load of them. When it says believes all things and hopes all things, he's saying that the life that one lives in agape can offer hope, can offer something better. Because as long as you and I are doing what is right, we have a promise that better things are on our way in heaven, if not upon this earth. Let me mention one other thing that's just too good to pass up under this verse. He says that agape believes all things. Please realize that it's not mine and your place, and it's not even right for you and I to predict others' failures. It's such a sad thing when someone strives to do better and someone else sets back a few pews back and says, oh, it'll only be a matter of time until they make that same mistake again. Or, oh, they really didn't even mean it when they said that they were sorry and they wanted to seek forgiveness. Listen, that's not agape. Agape believes the best in all things. Now, agape isn't foolish. And agape isn't senseless. But agape does believe the best. Agape is what will keep you and I from moving to a judgmental state of trying to read people's heart and trying to predict failure for them in the future. Let us agape each other. Let us build each other up. And let us hope the very best for each other. And you know what? If we'll do it, we'll start naturally building each other up because we'll believe the best about each other. Look at the last phrase there in verse 8. Agape never faileth. You see, you can't practice agape in sin. A husband and wife can't practice agape both all the time and the relationship be poor. A congregation can't practice agape all the congregation and then have problems. We can't practice agape toward God and then have a broken relationship with God. Agape never fails. Not once has it ever failed. Tonight, remember, God first showed agape to us. He didn't want to send His Son because that was the emotional thing for Him to do and He felt good about it. As a matter of fact, when Jesus was dying on the cross, the Bible tells us that God turned His head from the sight. It hurt Him. It didn't feel good at all. But He did it because it was right and best. Tonight, I ask you, are you serving your God tonight based upon a decision to do what is right and best? Don't wait for an emotion to pull you to your God. It won't happen. And if it does happen, it won't last. Tonight, have you decided, no matter what, you want to serve God? You want to turn away from sin, be baptized for the remission of those sins, and live for God, no matter what? Tonight, maybe in the past, you've become a Christian through baptism, but yet you failed. We all make our mistakes. Please keep in mind again, we need to do what is right to repent. If it's of a public nature, your sin, have you confessed your wrong? Have you prayed and asked forgiveness? It may not be the thing we want to do. And the truth is, it may not feel good. But it's what is right. It's what is best. Agape your God. Agape each other. Agape yourself. Tonight, if we can help you in any way, come as we stand, as we sing.